Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
This is our August 30th reviews issue, in which we will be discussing Batman Curse of the White Knight, Middle West, but first we have...
Batman Superman number one, and we've got... I really can't remember. We've got, I know it's Joshua Williamson as our writer.
And David Marquez.
Is it David Marquez as the artist? Yep, there we go. Joshua Williamson is our writer and David Marquez is our artist. So I don't know what everybody thinks of this, but you have me, sign me up. I always love Batman and Superman together. I always like watching the contrast.
I would say the first thing I got from this is, we have a such better suit for Superman in the first couple pages than we do for the rest of the book.
That's awkward.
That's awkward because that's like the villain Superman or whatever.
Well, no. I mean...
Well, we
don't know.
You know
maybe.
Or we'll see, I guess.
No, he's right. In the first couple pages, it's the...
The second Rebirth suit.
No, it's the... It's the other Superman.
Yeah, From a multiverse?
From the dark multiverse.
Which I don't know if that's really true, or at least that would retcon what happened in the actual Batman Who Laughs first one-shot, because I'm pretty sure Batman kills him right away. I'd have to reread that, but...
Yeah, I might honestly go buy the trade for that and read it, because I think I read the first issue, too.
Oh, no, issue one, like the one-shot right before Dark Knight's Battle. Which I guess there is a trade of all those one-shots. But anyway, I actually really liked this. I don't dig the art. I mean, the art is good. It's not my kind of art.
I like it. I'll come on the other side of that. I enjoy it. It's honestly, for me, it's got the weird creepiness that it needs.
Yeah.
And for this, it needs a little bit of... Because I know that you don't necessarily like the realism as much, right?
Yeah, that's...
See, and I think for something like this, you need a little more realism since it's kind of... It seems to be going that horror route.
I guess, yeah. I like cartoony.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I also like the giant death trap aspect of this. Like, it made me feel like it was, like, the 1950s or 1960s Batman stories.
I remember seeing something like that, too, because it mentions it. Well, the creepy part is where his bat cave is, too,
yeah.
Which is underneath where his parents died.
Yeah.
Ooh. Which is horrifying in its own right.
Right. What did you think of this, Patrick?
I wasn't a fan.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I picked it up because I thought it would be interesting, and I don't know. I feel like it's trying too hard.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm like not the biggest Batman Superman fan. So when they're doing their banter, it's just like, I don't know.
And I'm like over here eating that up.
I know. Right? You're just over there talking about how much you love it, and I'm just reading it like, I get it. You're Superman and you're Batman, and you guys have differing points of view. But, yeah, no. And then I don't know what it is about the Batman Who Laughs, too, but, like, it's such an interesting concept to me, and then every time I get into it, I'm just bored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one shot with him is really, really good. I don't know about the 7-issue series they did, but the one shot with him is
the one shot's amazing.
Yeah.
The one shot also has art by Riley Rossmo, and that really helped me.
It's true. It's also fucking ridiculously creepy.
Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is that with the banter between them is it's Batman truly saying, "What do you do if I go bad? What do you do if I go bad?" And he's like, "You're not going to." He's like, "What if would?" He's like, "You see that over there?
Yeah.
How are you going to stop me?"
I also don't like the Shazam angle in the story.
What do you mean?
Well, it's just like changing the most fun-loving character in the DC universe and making him, like, a infected, dark, multiverse version of the character was just... I get it. I get what you're trying to do story-wise. It's just not for me. Like, I want more happy, cartoony, uplifting Shazam stories instead.
Well, is it because we're not getting our other one from Jeff Johns as quickly as we want them?
Yeah, maybe that's it. Or, I want singular Shazam stories, too.
But, I mean, to be fair, this isn't a Shazam story.
No.
This is a Superman and Batman story. And, really, it's almost more of a Batman story than a Superman story.
Yeah, because it's Batman Who Laughs.
Yeah.
Well, the big thing with, I think, honestly, when I read that it was, you know, he said Billy Batson, I was like, you know, to nab a kid, that'd probably be super easy. And you just have to cover his mouth so he can't say Shazam.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't take much, especially considering he's already got the knowledge of who he is. It's not, because he said it was super similar. So to me, I don't know. I loved it. I'm going to keep reading them. I like them.
I might give it a second one to read at least. So.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed it. So it's just, yeah, I honestly think that this DC universe is going to end in failure. I'm curious where it's going to go.
Back to the beginning of Rebirth when it was bright and sunny and things are actually happy. Anyway.
Dr. Manhattan will just change it whatever way he wants.
Nope, because he can't see the future past
his
death.
Okay. Alright. Well, why don't you...
So we've got Batman Curse of the White Knight, Book 2, written and illustrated by Sean Murphy with colors by Matt Hollingsworth. I like this issue better than the first.
I agree.
I like the mythology building that's happening with Edmund Wayne and this weird, like, crazy crusade story going into Gotham and the passing down of the Sword of Azrael.
All I have to say is, best quote, world's greatest detective.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Harley is great in this, as usual. Man, Joker was pretty awesome
as
well.
He scared the shit out of me.
I loved when he goes up and takes over the stand. He has the little podium on. And,
Does he really?
It's misspelled in the E's backwards.
Yes, and he's the glasses that were made specifically to mock Gordon. So
yeah,
they have the, like,
mustache and the nose. Yeah.
Wow, I missed that on a lot of things. I was, like, too busy reading. I was like, read more.
I noticed something, though, really interesting with Azrael's sword, the one that's passed down, and as we were talking about in the last one, that it has the crucifix on it.
Yeah.
But it's really funny because when it's sheathed, when it's, like, face down, but the crucifix, yeah, it's, since it is, I forget which way it's oriented. It's
so when the sword is down, the crucifix faces normally how you would see it.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So that means when it's sheathed, when it's not doing any harm, it's a normal crucifix. But when you pull it out and you use it, the cross is upside down, which is, like, typically a satanic symbol.
Oh!
And having an upside down cross. So that's, like, a very, and then that's when it's being used, is when you have it out. And
wow.
It becomes a picture, a symbol of, like, the Antichrist, essentially.
Well, the fun thing is, that crucifix also faces upside down towards your enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true as well. And it faces towards you, so it's, like, giving you the savior of the blessing, and then the tip is, like, Satan or something like that.
Jesus. There's a lot of imagery in this book.
Yeah.
Speaking of an image, hello, pregnant Harley?
Yeah.
And world's greatest detective. I heard it in my head.
Right? Heard it in Arlene Sorkin's voice.
Oh, yeah.
So we assume that's Jack's kid, right?
I would assume as much, just because if you go to the, the next bit of
The preview for next month's issue?
It looks like she actually sees him.
Yeah.
Which that should be painful.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Azrael's suit, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Awesome.
A great, like, modernization of the classic Azrael costume.
I will say the Arkham Knight one, and Arkham City, that suit, that one's pretty good too, but this one's great as well. There's a lot of red in this.
That's the original suit, was all red.
Was it all red?
Yep.
I could deal more with a little bit of white.
One of them says it, one of his two,
I said all his henchmen.
Yeah.
It's like,
I don't want to call them henchmen, they're like his army buddies.
Yeah, his associates.
Yeah.
That's probably a better term.
Do either of you feel really bad for Ruth's mahogany desk, by the way?
Yeah.
Can you get your sword out of my desk, please?
Because she says that in the first one, too, to Joker. She's like, get your feet off my mahogany desk.
Right.
And then,
apparently cannot have her desk.
Who is she? Like, I feel like...
I don't know either. She looks like she could be an Amanda Waller character, but
right.
I've never heard the term. But then again, it's... What is it? It's, Who's writing?
Who's
writing it?
Sean Murphy.
I don't know if he's, like, giving a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to Amanda Waller, or he's like, this is somebody new, deal with it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure she's somebody new. She seems to be, like, and she's kind of talking that that she does a lot of work sort of in the shadows with these quote-unquote elites, so that would make sense that we haven't heard from her yet because she didn't want to be heard from.
And maybe Ruth is an identity and it is Waller.
Like, that's why, that's like, once she said the elite part of it, I don't know though, because if she's more for the elites, then that's what... I wonder if she has something to do with the Court of Owls.
Well, that would be interesting if he seeds the Court of Owls into this. Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Hello to the explanation of why Batman should never reveal himself to the public. Oh, I was like, oh, shit. That is, like, the most...
Like, we're about to drop some knowledge on
right, exactly. It's like, hey...
She explains, like, the fiscal responsibility that Batman... Yeah.
I was like... Well, damn, now I got this to show to everybody. He's like, why isn't he public? Well, let me show you why he ain't public, all right?
And then the other half of me is like, he's not Tony Stark. Go away.
Yeah, because it's like you always think, you know, if you unmask yourself, then it's just like the bad guys that you put in jail will be coming after you. But especially for somebody like Batman,
yeah,
you know, he would get, you know, what she'd say, like, thousands of assault charges.
Oh yeah.
Well, like, whatever ones weren't, I don't know how long assault charges last, but whatever ones were still in what's that term?
Oh, a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I can't think of the name, but the name of the damn term.
I mean, still, but if Batman is out there every night punching people in the face...
Oh, like, no, I know that. No, I
like
know
10
that.
Like, 10 years, that's thousands of faces that are punched.
Yeah. No, I totally know that. I'm just saying...
Everyone you ever worked with would be charged with aiding and abetting, including the entire GCPD.
Yeah, that's nuts. Could you imagine that trial?
Oh,
like, that would destroy...
Dude, the one thing,
like,
I will say is...
The entire infrastructure, there'd be no police force.
Where's the edge of this, where they're talking about with his daughter? Because he came out and ruined his life, but he didn't go after... Because he knows that he's Bruce Wayne, doesn't he?
Jack?
Or Joker doesn't he? Yeah, so I'm trying to understand the angle of going after just Barbara, because that just destroyed her life.
Because without...
That's true.
Without Batman, Joker doesn't have any fun.
Yeah.
So he needs Batman to still exist.
He's like, we're gonna do this a killing joke, but we're not gonna shoot Barbara. I got something better in mind.
Right. Well, and then they break down Batman from his infrastructure. They utilize all of the technology that he's so, you know, tied into and tied into all of his stuff as a complete way to take over.
Yeah.
And that was brilliant. It was so simple.
Yeah, exactly. And like just reprogramming like all of the bat vehicles to then start shooting at Batman while he's in the cave.
Yeah,
like, how has no villain ever thought of to do that before?
Yeah, and then just...
Because you have to find the cave first.
That's true, but, like, I feel like his cave has been found on a couple different occasions.
Yeah.
I think there was only... I mean, I don't know.
Either way.
Yeah. And then they blow up the mansion.
Yep. So that's, you know, we were talking in another episode about Hush and how he was like attacking Bruce Wayne on both sides, but this is really attacking Bruce Wayne and Batman on both sides.
Yeah,
like he blows up the bat. They're very specifically attacking the Batcave and the mansion.
Yeah,
at the same time, like these two separate entities with one blow.
Yeah, and he's also utilizing Ruth as a way to undermine Wayne's interests. So Ruth now is like, no, you've got to come out as an advocate for these things so that Joker doesn't.
So I guess the other half of that is she seems to be manipulating him from things, but she won't. The thing is she knows is if he gets revealed for who he is, then it's game over. So we'll just attack Batman then.
Yeah. This is intense. Book 2 definitely ratcheted things up quite a bit.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I'm super excited to see where this goes.
Me too.
I always love Joker's ridiculously long pistol.
It's so great.
It's always a great addition to any story.
And I like that his version of the Joker just wears a Batman t-shirt.
Oh yeah, see, that's awesome.
Isn't it like a belly shirt too?
Yeah, it's like just like a cutoff. It's a kid-sized shirt that he just cuts off and wears.
Yeah. Yeah, all great stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. So, with that said, I guess we'll move lastly and certainly not leastly into Middle West number 10 with art by Scotty Young, written by Scotty Young and art by Jorge Corona.
Yeah, this book would probably be way different if Scotty Young was the one doing the art.
Yeah, you had Scotty Young's art in my head with all your variant covers by him.
I have to admit, I feel like Jorge, though, has a like, almost from the school of Scotty Young.
Yeah. Style, so. I totally agree with that, like, cartoonish in a certain way.
Definitely, like, edgy, the use of, the way the brush or the quill pen is used is very, like, scratchy and quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't need to find a line. It just grabs the line that's there.
See, and I'm, like, trying to think of this in, like, Scotty Young's with his little guys running around and talking.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't always draw the X-Baby style.
Oh, no, I know that.
I'm thinking about the I Hate Fairyland style, and I could see this being done that way pretty easily.
See, and I'm just thinking about the little X-Men covers. Yeah,
the chibi X-Men. So, what were your overall thoughts on this issue?
Dude. Rough.
Rough.
Like, this is, I mean, for all the bright colors and, like, fantasy elements, it's a pretty rough book deep down, and with the introduction of the grandfather and then, like, the reversal, like, pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Is, oof. That was, the very end, that final splash page just gives me chills. And, like, ugh. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's a great book, and
they don't ever
awesome,
say so. And that's the thing that bothers me is like we're one in the same, and he doesn't say what they are. I'm like, you dick. That was literally the only thing I got salty about.
What do you mean, like?
Because he never actually puts a name to what they are, and I'm curious.
Oh,
if
you want
have
like a
name.
Term for
the
affliction,
gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Like brokenheartedness or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like it's something better than that. But yes,
probably.
Instead
well, of course, because he's Scotty Young and not going to us.
He's like, I still have a bunch of issues to go. Mm-hmm. Sit over there quietly.
I mean, this is an ongoing, as far as I know. So there's a bunch.
I thought it was 12.
No, I think this is just them. The story may wrap up in 12, but I'm pretty sure that there's more than that coming.
But yeah, I was hoping that he would give more. I'm so sorry. He would give us more backstory as to why they have this.
Oh, where the affliction itself comes from.
Yeah, and why it seems to be, it only affects the men in their family, it seems like. And so now I'm curious if Abel's grandfather's father had it, and his father, if it's like a thing that just kind of has been going down the line.
Well, domestic abuse is pretty commonly passed down, like, from father to son, like, almost as, like,
so,
a genetic thing, quote-unquote.
Yeah,
unquote,
that was the thing I struggled with, is the perpetuation of the cycle of abuse. It is a slippery slope story, because both his father and grandfather are bad people. You know, they're bad people, and there is a problem where you, through the cycle of abuse, can start to feel empathy for, especially Abel's dad, because he went through it. And I have a problem with that feeling of, like, I don't want to feel empathetic for Abel's dad. He made the choice to be that way to his son.
Yeah.
See, and I have absolutely no ability to empathize on that route. It sounds terrible, but I don't.
Well, and that's
because
to
me, there's a certain point where you choose to either be like the person who harmed you, or you don't.
Right.
You have a choice at one point in time, because at the very end of this, Abel does the same thing.
Right. Well, Abel is trying to break the cycle, mm-hmm. which is great. I just, it is a dangerous place to write to have them accidentally make him empathetic.
Yeah.
And that was the one thing out of this issue, because this is my favorite series, period, bar none. But, like, I'm like, please, you know, he's Abel's dad's still the villain. I do like the breaking of the trope of, like, the happy grandpa. You know, like, grandpa's the safe place.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not it at all.
Yeah,
so.
It's in fact the opposite. Like,
yeah. And he might be even worse. He's a worse villain than his dad.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it seems to be that that's about what it is.
Because he's also, like, literally cold-hearted.
Yeah.
as well.
And he's fully embraced it, you know, yeah. Like, he embraced it into solidarity, into living in the land of winter, you know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, the other part of
is it the land of winter, or is this the land of his own creation?
Well, that's what I mean, like, he's built the land of winter for himself.
There was a flashback of him, it's right here at the bottom.
Yeah.
Of him, I don't know what he's yelling about, but he's angry about something.
Yeah. Oh, he's angry about the fact that his
kid was crying.
Was crying too much.
I'm pretty sure that's how babies work, but it's fine.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a really rough story, and yeah, it's just the danger too of the inevitability of it. Like, I'm really hoping that Abel can truly break the cycle, and that is the big lesson, is that you don't have to be defined by you're not defined by the sins of your father. Like, that's...
And I definitely think it's kind of...
It's a biblical thing.
Yeah.
Even, as silly as that sounds, not to bring that into it, but that's a pretty forethrough with a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of different things.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling it's going to continue to walk that line between the two, but knowing how good of a writer Scotty Young is, I don't think he's going to fall into something that simple. I think, in the end, too, he's a pretty hopeful, like, hopeful guy in general. I know that sounds weird, a lot of the stuff he's done, but, like, I don't think he is, like, I don't think he's going to make this dark, like... I mean, it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
What am I saying?
I'm like, Patrick, I need a flashlight to get through this.
There needs to be a happy ending for Abel in some sense, is what you're saying. Or there's going to be some sort of...
Yes. I have...
If I don't get lore, I'm going to be mad.
I don't know. The way that this story has been unfolding, I don't think we're going to get lore. Because it's all just sort of there. Like, it just all sort of exists.
Yeah. I don't do well with that a lot of the times.
I mean, just read more of the story and you'll get more of the story.
Yeah.
That's...
fill in the blanks yourself, right? What do you think it came from?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think it was because he was angry, or do you think it was some sort of external force that put the curse on him, you know?
His dad touched him.
Do all good
things. No, but, like, going back farther, because you said you were concerned about the genesis of the...
I am curious about that, because it's... The weird part is if you notice, they all change colors, because now his grandfather's is white, isn't his dad's blue?
Yeah. Or gray, bluish gray, something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know what color Abel's is. I don't remember.
It's red.
Is it red?
Yeah.
When he uses it, right?
Well, his grandfather, when he does it, you can see it, and it's white.
Right. Well, I thought we see Abel's in that moment too.
Yeah.
Abel's is red.
Yeah, he shows it to his granddad. Yeah, because it's still, like, warm and full of blood, and his granddad's is white, and his dad's is, like...
Blue. So it's progression. Like, red.
Bluish.
Red to blue. It starts to fade away and become white.
Exactly.
When you have no more emotion to give.
Yep. At least feeding into anger. Yeah.
Yeah, we went back into lights. Way to go, Image, for bringing the color spectrum into again.
Yeah, that's true. Colors, man, they're important. There's a lot of symbolism in that stuff. So... Yeah.
I basically just want to understand. Like, no one said what it is. Everybody's just terrified of it. So I'm just like, can someone have the bravery for five? Just give me two little panels as to what it is, because I want a name for it.
I don't want to have an explanation for it.
Yeah.
Is one, though, because everybody knows what it is, or at least
the everybody wizards. Knows. Everybody knows that somebody with that symbol does bad stuff. And that they're incredibly dangerous and they're monstrous, but there may not be the knowledge of what it truly is.
Yeah. True. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I don't want an explanation for it. I just want, like, the continuation of the story.
Yeah.
Want an explanation.
It's a magical representation of when somebody is a bad person and they make bad decisions, they become a bad monster.
Yeah, then your heart begins to break.
Yeah.
Quite, like, literally in this instead of just metaphorically.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too, is Abel's dad, because if you look at him, too, is Abel's dad's, is his heart in two pieces?
Yes.
Was that guy's heart in two pieces as well? And Abel's just has the crack in it, right?
Yeah, but it's pretty cracked.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost cracked all the way through.
Yeah.
And that would be interesting to see, like, if it progresses at all.
That's what I was curious about, because...
If it can, or even if it can heal. Like, mm-hmm. can it go back to being whole?
That's true, yeah.
And if he's able to go back to being whole, will he be left with some other ability? Will he have some sort of power?
His is split in two.
Yeah.
I think his is actually split in two as well. I don't think anything touches it.
It really cool.
I think so.
I'm pretty sure it's...
No, I think it's tough. I think it basically looks like this one.
At the base of it. But I think it's worse, though, now. Because if you look at this one right here...
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it is worse, but I'm pretty sure it's still connected because, you know, it's
because he hasn't
broken.
He hasn't given up on
it. Yeah, exactly. Because, so. I mean, geez, talk about symbolism.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should probably
call it there.
it's a great book to talk about, but it's
colors
tough.
And symbols and colors and more colors.
I want more fantasy elk creatures like and fantasy bear things. Like
that's what comics are, just symbols and colors.
Symbols and colors.
All right. Cool. Well, with that, I guess we should probably say goodbye then, huh?
Yep.
All right. Bye.